On Friday, September 28th, the Norris Group proudly presented its 11th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, tech disruption, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. All proceeds from the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event would not have been possible without the generous support of the following platinum partners: the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club, Inland Empire Real Estate Investment Club, Think Realty, Wilson Investment Properties, Coach Fullerton, First Lending Solutions, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, MVT Productions, and Realty 411. Visit isurvivedrealestate.com for event information and see Amazon Prime or YouTube for past events.
What about the 10 million more people turning 65 and over? How does that affect housing?
My numbers, I think, are actually 18 million over the next 10 years. So it's a very big number. Their shift is, it used to be, I'm hitting retirement, I'm going to go play golf. Now I'm going to find where my kids got a job and the grandkids are, and so we're seeing them move to those areas. We're doing a lot of feasibility work where people are selling their homes or maybe keeping it or renting it out, and then turning around and becoming renters. So actually older homeowners turning into renters for a variety of reasons, and maybe one is the lack of a tax deduction. And the remodeling business, I'm very bulled up on. I mean, the homes were not built for that many people over the age of 65, so the opportunities to remodel are just fantastic. And I'm sure the ones that are fixing up homes are selling them to a lot of those type of people and putting different things in them than just family-oriented homes.
That's all consistent with our survey data of households. The boomers are basically saying we're going to age in place. We want the kids to come home and bring the grandkids, but we've got $6.5 to $7 trillion of equity. So we're going to tap some of that equity, and we're going to make this house habitable for ourselves as we age in place. And we see that in our data at Fannie Mae, that we can track cash-out refinances. And while refinances in total have fallen, the share of them that are extracting cash is rising continually. So they're actually doing that. And I also was speaking with somebody at one of the big building products firms about whether or not this remodeling thing was real from their perspective, and they said that's the sector of their sales that's actually growing. Also, if you go on and look at Google Trends data, I don't know if any of you look at Google Trends data, but most of the housing, as you know, housing has slowed down now, and in fact sales this year in total will probably be lower than they were last year. The one piece of the Google Trends data search that is rising is the remodeling space.
Yeah. As an economist, a top economist, and I agree with Jana.
Target.
how much emphasis do you put on an inverted yield curve?
Boy, that's really interesting. You've got different Fed governors squaring off against some believe it matters and others don't believe it matters. It's a pretty consistently correlated relationship to economic downturns. If you look at the instances where the 10-year treasury rate has fallen below the 90-day treasury rate within 12 to 18 months every time there has been a recession. So it's very strongly correlated. Whether it's the cause or not, you can argue over your economic models, but it's very highly correlated when it's the 90-day treasury and the 10-year treasury.
If the Fed continues its pace in the short end, when will that crossover likely happen?
It really depends on what happens on two things.
Okay.
One is the continued pace of growth. If this expansion grows stronger and longer than what the current forecasts are, you probably won't see that reversal especially if that is tied to the European Central Bank actually raising rates or easing as well. Because we're, I don't know if those of you who watch bond market yields, last week there was a speech by Draghi who suggested inflation in Europe was growing faster than they thought and the U.S. 10-year Treasury rose. So we're, it's not just about our market.
I'm confused about something. When I looked up what a 10-year T-bill was in 1932, middle of the Great Depression, GDP growth was minus 23%, 25% unemployment, and the 10-year was 3.65%. And right now it's little under 3.1. So which one of those numbers is completely wrong? Because we have full employment, basically, and GDP growth, say, at an average of 3 for the first half. How can those two worlds have gotten it right when each was so, I mean, we're at a peak economy and now they're at the depths of the all-time greatest. So did we have that big of a problem that we've just avoided? That's what that kind of told me. That scared me.
Well, there's no question that had the monetary authorities, Bernanke and Paulson and the others, Geithner, stepped in to save the banking system, we would have gotten there. We were heading way north of 10% unemployment. Frankly, to me, the one program that was instituted that the public really never knew about was corporations go to short-term credit markets, not in the banks, but in the bond market, to borrow money to meet payroll. And that market froze. And the Fed opened a conduit, which went from $0 to $300 billion in 90 days to fund the employees of Ford Motor and Chrysler and U.S. Steel and all of those corporations. That reestablished confidence in the capital markets, and they wound that program down over about another 6 to 9 months. To me, that was one of the most successful federal government programs in the history of the country. And it kept unemployment at 10 or 11%, at where it could have easily been at 20% or north.
Okay. John, you talk about something in your podcast. Talk about maturing markets. So how do you determine a maturing market is maturing? What is it that you look at?
Well, it's usually something is gone on for too long or get completely out of whack. And it's not construction this time around. There's very little construction in almost every market in the country, but it's affordability. When you have a 9-year expansion and low interest rates the whole time, and demand, a supply cannot keep up with demand, you have prices that go through the roof. And so we think that the next recession is going to be pretty painful for pricing, not as painful on volume and not as painful on construction, although, you know, pricing hurts. So the markets that are frothy like that, like we're sitting in one of them, we're calling mature, which means we think we're near the end of the cycle, but I can't tell you whether it's this year, next year, or the year after. It's just risky.
You're talking about in California?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you expect to see real estate prices go up nationally for the next year or two? Or
yeah, that's our forecast.
Okay.
So we don't see a lot of supply in the market coming from the new or the resale market, and I buy into Doug's latest forecast that the economy is going to keep growing. And so that should be, and actually I also think wage growth is going to be stronger than most people think. In a low unemployment world, that makes sense. That will fuel some good price appreciation, not as much as we saw last year, but maybe about 2 points less.
Do you see the end of this cycle mimicking the end of any other cycle that we've experienced?
Well, it feels a little bit like the 99-2000 period, where housing was still coming off of its back after the S&L crisis. We weren't overbuilding the market. We had a frothy tech market, particularly in NASDAQ. It kind of feels like that. The difference would be the Fed funds rate was at 6.5, and he dropped it to 1 almost instantaneously and used housing to prop up the economy. And given the lack of supply and I talked about hitting the debt market. The industry that has hit the debt market the least is housing. I think housing, if I were the Fed chair, I would look at all the industries and say, that looks like the healthiest industry to me. What can I do to help it get going? So that I see a parallel there. There's some differences, but some parallels.
Okay. But you think that California, in this next down cycle, will lose price?
I mean, by down cycle, I mean we're actually shedding jobs and people are losing their jobs.
Okay.
Yes. When that happens, I do think the prices could correct pretty substantially.
Okay.
You guys should know this, too, because you're part of this. I think a buffer to that is now we have people like you, but even more importantly, the Blackstones and people of the world that will raise, when that starts happening, will raise billions of dollars and start buying right away because they already have an engine to rent them out. So there could be a buffer down there at some point that it won't be as bad as the last time as we have institutions coming in to take advantage of it.
In the next number of years, let's say we got $21 trillion and growing. We have a lot of bonds that will come due, right? And is there always, the assumption is there's always a buyer for that. What if there's not? I'm just curious, because this is one of the questions I got asked to ask.
Well, I think there will be, but at what price?
Okay.
I mean, that's really, so I talked about what the conditions were in the bet that was going to extend the expansion and was having growth rate faster than was anticipated before the tax cut. The problem with that spending component means that's going to have to be funded. Well, the way that gets funded is those who buy American goods have to put that cash back to work, and they buy U.S. treasuries. So if you set about attempting to eliminate the trade deficit, you're going to cut off the people that are providing the dollars to fund that debt. So it's possible that that could stop. That part of current policy is on a train wreck heading.
Okay. Who's the buyer then?
Well, China's one of them right now.
Okay.
They would not be.
They would not be.
In that circumstance.
I mean,
right?
Who would be the replacement buyer?
Well,
the Fed?
Whether there are enough replacement buyers around the world, we would see. But it's not going to just be Americans. They will require some global capital inflows.
Last question in this segment. The Fed controls the short end. Who controls the 10-year? How is that move?
It's determined in capital markets by global capital trades.
Okay. So
inflows and outflows.
So does that get influenced by rates of typical or other 10-year?
Absolutely. Right now, the U.S., I think I said this last year when I was here, we're the best-looking horse outside the glue factory. Right?
Okay.
So it's hard for the U.S. 10-year to go too far when the German Bund is at 0.5 and we're at 3.1 or something like that. So that's what I was saying earlier about the global capital market conditions will have an impact on how far U.S. rates can go on the long end.
What is Japan's equivalent to our 10-year? What is it?
Zero.
Zero? Okay. But didn't they raise it? There was like some big stink about they raise it to a tenth or something.
Well, they were debating that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Didn't make it. All right. Well, thank you guys very much.
I'm going to change it up a little bit. The topics this year are going to be a little nerdy. For this segment, we're going to talk a little bit about everything from 3D printed houses to artificial intelligence. So, nerdy, right? First, I'd like to call up Marnie Blanco. She is a VP of Industry Relations with Dotloop, a company of Zillow Group. Welcome. She manages developing strategic partnerships with leading brands across the industry, and her background is tech innovation, product marketing, and technology platforms. Welcome for the first time.
Thank you.
Okay. We have got Eddie Wilson, CEO of Affinity Worldwide, which controls over 80 brands, including Think Realty, the National Real Estate Insurance Group, and the American Association of Private Lenders. Thank you. And last but certainly not least, one of our all-time favorites, Sean O'Toole, founder and CEO of Property Radar. He's been involved in technology and software since the age of 18 and has been a central entrepreneur ever since. Welcome, Sean. Woo-hoo. So, Marnie, I'm going to start with you. For those who are not familiar with Dotloop, what would be your elevator pitch?
Yes. Well, I have to ask, anyone here familiar with Dotloop? Ooh, I love it when we see a couple hands come up. So Dotloop is a digital transaction management system. So that's a lot of words for when you do your transactions. It covers everything from completing your agreements, your contracts, your documents, to going to the collaboration of all the parties within the transaction, to the e-signatures, out to the brokers to do compliance and checks, and then finally storage. So we do it all in one system instead of what many do probably in three or four systems.
So instead of PDFing it, sending it to an e-sign software, you got something wrong, send it back, and the transcats got it.
Exactly.
So in 2015, Zillow Group bought Dotloop. Why was it so important? What's Zillow looking to do?
Sure. Yeah, so we were acquired back in August of 2015, so it's been a little bit over 3 years now. And when we were acquired, it was interesting. There's a lot of speculation, and Zillow's always the boogeyman, right, in the industry. So everyone thought, well, what are we doing with an acquisition like Dotloop? The end of the day, though, it's just to make the consumer transaction easier. And that's always been our mission at Dotloop, is to make the transaction easier, not only for the agent and the broker, but make it a good consumer experience. And that aligned very well with the Zillow ideals and mission that they're trying to accomplish as well.
Do you have to be a Zillow agent to use the software?
No. You don't have to be with Zillow to use the software. We have, let's see, last month we were over about 450,000 agents, unique agents, were on the system. So we run almost half of the transactions of the U.S. go through Dotloop in some form or fashion, meaning that if you have an agent on one side or a co-op agent on the other side, perhaps a signature is going through, an offer is going through, et cetera. Our goal is to have everyone on, regardless whether you're with Zillow or not.
So complete integration of all the systems.
Yes.
We're about to talk about artificial intelligence. It gets thrown around a lot. Is there a lot of talk about that coming into play, and what's next for integration?
Absolutely. So integration, artificial intelligence is a big factor at Zillow and Dotloop. We probably even recently increased our AI team, I would say even almost 8x of what it has been. So it's definitely a big focus. In the Dotloop world, particularly because we deal with hundreds of thousands of agents, we hear from a lot of them that the offer process is clunky and hard and difficult, and some people text, and some people email, and some people call, and some people, you know, do all these different things. So we have actually put out what we call Dotloop Messenger that is taking a lot of artificial intelligence into the mix and simplifying the offer process by natural language learning and all of this kind of different ways to do behavior learning so that we can make that process offer and we can kind of prompt it to be a little bit more streamlined than it is today.
Okay. Well, artificial intelligence is getting thrown around a lot. Sean, I have to ask you this question. Is the term being used correctly? There's a lot of technology in the real estate space. What do you think?
The best way to explain it is, there's a lot of places artificial intelligence is being used, and a lot of places it's being used well. Piece that I think most people, they oversubscribe to, like, what it can do. So, for example, a lot of talk, Zillow uses artificial intelligence in their AVMs, OfferPad, and some of these others have talked about AVMs. And I guess anytime somebody's talking to you about artificial intelligence, like, take a step back, because at the end of the day, artificial intelligence needs machine-readable data in order to do something. So think about the last time you valued a piece of property and the things that you took into account, right? What's up and down the street? How's the neighborhood feel? What's the front yard look like? What's the floor plan, right? Most of that data is not machine-readable. Right, so people think, oh my gosh, it's going to come up with perfect values for everything. When it gets to the point where there's the same machine-readable data, right? Same thing with chatbots, right? So we're talking right now. I can see your expression and tone of your voice and all of these things. I get to take all of that into account. Most of these things, Siri and Alexa, they're keyword spotting, right? It's today and weather. Oh, I'm going to tell them about the weather today, right? It's the I think what some people believe it can do versus where it's really at. The gulf is still wide.
I hear it's using a lot of marketing right now. I've been talking a lot about zero interface for the last couple of years, just preparing our company for what happens when screens go away. So as a marketer, when I say, hey, Alexa, how often can I just say something and Alexa respond? And people sort of look at you like you're crazy, but if you've never seen a 4 or 5 year old with an Amazon Dot, it's absolutely magical. We've all seen the 1.5 year old find the phone. They can't talk, but they can find pictures and videos of themselves. The 5 year old, Alexa is just a friend that will tell you anything and even jokes that are hilarious to a 5 year old. But there's also my favorite video probably of last year was Google Grandmother, Italian Google Grandmother. Watching an 8-year-old who got the Google, she got the Google Mini, I think, for Christmas, and she's, through a very thick accent, trying to get Google to tell her what the weather, Google, what the weather is, and she's banging on it, and the kids are laughing. It's hilarious. But the magic part is when it works, and you see the look on her face, and she just realizes she has a friend, and it doesn't matter if you're 5, or if you're 80 with a really thick Italian accent, the goal is we're not looking at screens anymore. User interface, I mean, Apple's made their entire life out of making it so beautiful and easy to get what you need, but now you're just talking into thin air. So we very specifically this year, it was the very first year for iSurvive Real Estate, we didn't interview people before the event because we were so busy interviewing people. We interviewed offers.com. One of their pitches is within a 70% certainty, they're going to know when somebody sells within 1 year. Oh, you're smiling. Now, to be fair, that's probably in the best city. If you go to different cities and you click on the areas, it's a different percentage. But a lot of us spend a lot of money marketing, and that's pretty significant. But is that artificial intelligence or just a lot of data crunching?
Well, so again, it comes back to, it's really more of a data question, right? So if you're Zillow and you have all the traffic of people searching for homes, you probably have a pretty good idea of who might be thinking about buying a home, right? If you're some other company that's just using public records data, right? When was the last time you went and did something in public records before you went to sell your home, right? So you really have to kind of like dig through and say, what are you making this prediction on? What data are you using? Could I use that data to make that prediction, right? There's nothing, what artificial intelligence does is it allows you to do things at scale. It doesn't allow you to do things that weren't fundamentally previously possible. And that's, I think, where, right? So could you go look at that same data and predict who was gonna run, you know, buy a home? Well, yeah, if you can, then there's a pretty good chance now you can put AI on doing that at scale.
Just remember when it was so easy, yellow letters, just. And Eddie, one of the reasons I wanted you on the panel is what you've done to the magazine is quite impressive. Think Realty Magazine, the personal real estate magazine rebrand, and you're doing a lot of video and a lot of radio. I think as a marketer and a PR guy myself, the mix is getting difficult. And when you talk about zero interface, it's feeling more and more like we have 5 influencers. We're going to have to be going through the filter of either Facebook or Microsoft has Cortana, Amazon has Alexa. Are those really the filters that I have to learn to play in? They're not going to be going to websites anymore. Is that some stuff that you're having to think about now?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we have 84 companies. And so a lot of the things that we're doing in mass media is to get people to raise their hand or force them into some funnel. You know, then we're using all these new tools, you know, voice recognition on Facebook. You know, now you begin to say a product and we can serve you the product. And you're going, how did they know that I just said that? Well, because of the machine learning that has AI attached to it. And so for us, it's getting fundamentally harder to get them to take action, but not to find out who they are.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris with the Norris Group. You are not going to want to miss our final event for 2018. It's our Cutting Edge Financial Tactics Brunch coming up October 27th in Costa Mesa, California. Last year was so successful, we brought them all back for another session. We all get tired of hearing, talk to your CPA, talk to your attorney. Well, what if you put them all on stage, beating up some of the most advanced questions you've got as a real estate investor? Well, that's what we did. So this year, if you're going to participate, we ask that you watch the entire show from last year on Amazon Prime. So this year, we can cover more difficult topics. Our guests include Karn Hall with UDirect IRA, Bill Exeter with Exeter 1031 Exchange, Amanda Hahn and Mac McFarland with Keystone CPA, and Harry Barth with Barth Calderon Attorneys. We'll hope to see you there October 27th in Costa Mesa.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate. Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Guaranteed Rate, and Nathan Chiboya. Inaday Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jason Thorman with Coldwell Banker, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keystone CPA, LA South RIA, Las Brisas Escrow, Michael Ryan and Associates, New Western, NorCal RIA, NSDREI, Orange County Real Estate Investors, The Outspoken Investor, Pacific Premier Bank, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Real Wealth Network, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, SJREI, Spinnaker Loans, South OC RIA, Tri-County Association of Realtors, UDirect IRA Services, White House Catering. Visit isurvivedrealestate.com for event information.